Hi, this is John O'Hare from Clear Lake, Iowa. And this episode is brought to you by Ivy Envy Patreon supporters like me. Learn more at patreon.com/IvyEnvy. Next!
Hi, and thanks for downloading this episode of the Ivy Envy Podcast. This is our 348th episode. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and joining me, the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hey, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
I mentioned on the last episode that we will be up at Wrigley a few times in the next week. I'll be there tomorrow, Monday, for social media night. The event is before the game at the Captain's... It's not the Captain Morgan's Club, but it's the... I don't know. It's something.
I don't even say the name.
I don't know. It's one of those draft ones.
One day fantasy things.
Right.
It's not like TD Ameritrade pub.
No, I think it might be DraftKings, but I don't know. It's one of those things. This is ridiculous.
I'd never even heard of him until like a week ago.
Oh my gosh.
It's all I hear about.
How have you not heard about those until a week ago?
I'm the 80-year-old guy who sits in his garage. Like you said, I live under a rock.
I'm surprised you haven't seen a truck drive by with a billboard on the side of it.
This is the one guy who hasn't heard of this. Somebody drive over there.
Somebody parachutes into your driveway and the parachute is an ad for it.
So anyways, that's where that event is. It's in what the area of the ballpark formerly known as the Captain Morgan's Club. If you're going to social media night or just to the game, you want to hang out for a bit before the game, just shoot me a tweet or email me, Corey@IvyEnvy.com. And then the three of us will be up there on Saturday for the Cubs Pirates game. And since it is an early game, we won't do much hanging out before the game, but if you're up there, we're going to meet up with some listeners after the game at Guthrie's Tavern. It's on Addison, a few blocks west of Wrigley. And man, guys, I got a great parking spot over there by using the ParkWiz app on the site of IVMV.com.
Nice. I'm looking forward to not walking far.
I'm sold on this. I want to find more reasons to use the ParkWiz app. I don't. That may seem kind of weird. But, no, so, I mean, you've heard me talk about this on the last few episodes, but, if you're going to any home games this week and you'll be driving up to Wrigleyville, this is the easiest way to get a parking spot, easiest and cheapest. I got our spot for under $20. So that's a prime game on a Saturday weekend game. And it's all taken care of. We don't have to drive around, try to find a place to park or, you know, in a lot or worry, you know. Sometimes you park in those lots and you worry about how soon you need to get there to get your car out of there and all that kind of stuff. So just go to IVMV.com and on the right side of the page, there's a ParkWiz widget thing. And you can pick the game, select your parking spot. And since I have an account, if you get a hold of me before you register, I can send you a referral code to get $10 off your first purchase. And so email me if you would like that. And, you know, if there's playoff games at Wrigley in October, you're definitely going to want to use something like that ParkWiz widget to find your parking spot. So, again, go to IVMV.com and select your game on the ParkWiz app. Okay, so let's talk about baseball and specifically about this series that the Cubs just wrapped up with the Cardinals. But before we get to that series, let's do a quick playoff picture update. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah. The Cubs are now 6 games back from the Cards in the division and 2 games behind the Pirates for wild card 1. The Pirates did win today. And so there are 13 games left to play. So it looks like not a whole lot is going to change except for the possibility of the Cubs still overtaking the Pirates for wild card 1. Wild card 2 is pretty much secured as the Giants and the Nationals are both 9 games back. So, in fact, you posted a picture of the Cubs' chances of making the playoffs today are at 100%.
Yeah.
I think you posted that on Facebook maybe.
Yeah, but yesterday, yeah.
I don't know. They say that, you know, the baseball is kind of about getting hot at the right time when it comes to heading into the playoffs. And the Cubs had won 5 in a row before today's loss, and they've gone 13-6 in September. So it does seem like they're playing pretty well at the right time. And I don't think that today's loss is really going to derail any momentum that they've kind of gathered along the way in September.
No, I don't think so. And I mean, I think it just feels like this lead for the second playoff spot is totally safe.
Yeah. 9 games back is pretty much insurmountable.
It takes 100% playoff odds, according to Baseball Prospectus, for us to feel like, okay, I think maybe we've got this wrapped up. I think we're good.
You can exhale.
Yeah. So did you say what the magic number is, Andy?
No, it's 5, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We did not get to take any off that that amount today, but I was really hoping, you know, I'm going to the game tomorrow on Monday and then the one on Saturday. I was hoping that the clincher would happen on one of those days, but it will happen somewhere in between. Unfortunately, I mean, fortunately, I'm not, who, look at me complaining. I wish it was happening on this day.
Despite,
I'm going to miss it.
So yeah, that good. You know, that's just a bright outlook.
It's kind of funny. Like we just kind of like came to the conclusion live here that the Cubs are definitely making the playoffs. And like, that's the extent of our excitement and reaction. It's like, yeah, this is nice.
Well, I mean,
like that's what we do here.
I'll tell you, that's not actually true, because yesterday we were driving over to Michael's place to play wiffle ball. And as I was driving, I thought, wait a minute, I didn't look at the Baseball Prospectus playoff odds, because I've been waiting for that 100%. You know, it was up to like 99.5. I think it got up to 99.7. And I was like, man, I just want to see that 100%. And then I saw that and I was so pumped. Like, I could not wait to get over to Michael's, talk to him, hand out some high fives. Bob was there. Andy, you were there. And I don't know. I was excited. So even though I may have been like, oh, we're going to the playoffs, I was so pumped when I saw that. Like, I was like thrilled.
Yeah, I've definitely had my more excitable moments than right now. But
okay, so let's talk about this Cardinals series. I loved seeing the Cubs play the way they did and win these games. Even today's game, which did not end how we would have liked it, it was still an exciting game, and I can't really be too upset about the Cubs' performance in that game. And I just think it's great to kind of build momentum with this series with the Cardinals.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to be the sort of aggressor, I guess I'll say, in this series, because like, the Cardinals have had more injuries lately. They seem to be reeling. The starting pitching hasn't been as good as it has been all year, which is kind of what's carried them, sort of the depth of starting pitching, not really the dominance, but. And so now it's kind of like they're faltering and the Cubs are accelerating. And that's really cool to see that happen this late in the season. So, yeah, going into the series, it was awesome. And then to see them take the first two games and then have the opportunity for the sweep today was, I don't know, that was amazing.
And today's win for them was a very uncomfortable win. I mean, the outcome felt like it was in doubt the whole time, even with them ahead. So,
or in like game two was the bullpen game and they still won. And it's sort of like, that was the game we kind of thought, oh, well, you know, if we're going to lose one, it's probably going to be that one.
Yeah. But, you know,
and they pulled it out.
Well, and I think we knew that, I mean, pitching has carried this Cardinals team this year. They've been, you know, there have been certain things that they've been incredible at. For instance, leaving runners on base, you know, just like an absurd rate, you know. And I think it's catching up with them. But the one thing that kind of stands out to me in this series, and even going back to the last series in St. Louis 2 weeks ago, is that up till this point, and especially like that series that the Cubs played in St. Louis in at the end of June, the Cardinals have just played this season up until now. They've played against the Cubs with this, like, I guess, like, air of inevitability. You know, like, they knew they were going to be able to pull it out, and we knew they were going to be able to pull it out. And it was just this, my gosh, like, they're, like, I think they were in our heads. You know what I mean? And now it's like, with these last two series, with the Cubs winning 4 of 6 from them, and really just, like, absolute, like, just especially dominating them in those two games in St. Louis, and then just, I don't know, I would say even today's game, like, I don't think the Cardinals can walk away from today's game thinking, okay, well, we stuck it to them today. We got the best of them. It was like, well, we barely escaped out of there. We probably didn't deserve that. I mean, the Cubs had the bases loaded with no outs, down by 2, and unfortunately weren't able to even tie it, which is really frustrating. But I think that this, like, the fact that the Cardinals had this, like, air of inevitability and their fans exude that, I think right now we're seeing, like, Cardinals fans really just, like, lash out because this is uncharted waters for them. They're not used to the Cubs. I mean, the Cubs have played the Cardinals well in the past, but it's been a long time since the Cubs have been playoff contenders and played the Cardinals pretty well.
Mm-hmm. And it's good to see. I mean, I give some credit to Dan in the chat. He says that the pitching has regressed to the mean, and I think that's true of the Cardinals as a whole. The whole year, we're like, how in the world are they still winning? How are they this good? And that's kind of the weird thing with baseball, is like, teams go on these streaks, but they've been able to maintain it for so long. Mm-hmm. But now to see them start to regress back to what the team they're supposed to be on paper is awesome.
I don't want to talk about
going backwards and the Cubs are going forward.
Right. And I don't want to talk about the Cardinals very much, but I mean,
I do.
I think that they're in they're getting a lot of guys back, but they're also like, so what do you do? You've kind of had these, like, younger kids and these backups that have played well all season, but now you're getting the big names back. What do you do? Do you bench the guys that have gotten you there? Or it's just, I don't know. I love watching it. And I don't think Matheny managed well this weekend either. Like, they just, to me, they look like they're kind of like spiraling. And maybe that's just because that's what I want to see, but
it could be.
I don't know.
Yeah.
No,
I would agree with you, but I don't have any, like, particular instances that I would call out.
Well, I think, like, today, I think they could have gone to Rosenthal earlier. I mean, as I was watching it on TV, and I thought, you know, man, they need to get out of this eighth inning. You know, they were, like I said, bases loaded, no outs. They needed out of it. And I thought, And when I was watching on TV, Len Casper said, you know, this might be where you go to Rosenthal instead, even though he's a closer, because you've got to get out to that. You got to get out of the eighth inning for the ninth inning to matter.
Mm-hmm.
But do we want to get into any of the hit by pitch drama at all? Do we want to?
I think we have to talk about it, don't we?
Well, go for it.
Well, I mean, I mean, it would be weird to me if I was listening to a Cubs podcast and we didn't talk about it. I just think
that's true.
Like, that just happened, and like, oh, they didn't even talk about it. I will say, in hindsight, I'm less agitated about it now than I was when it happened. Like, I'm kind of over it. I think it sorted itself out. I think that the thing that irritates me the most about it isn't the baseball side of it; it's the fan side of it. People are accusing Heron of hitting a guy in the head on purpose, which I think is just absurd. I mean, he played for the Cardinals. Like, not that that, you know, changes how he throws at a guy, but pitchers just don't do that. They know better. It's just stupid to accuse him of that.
Well, I want to interrupt you real quick on that point. Tonight, if you're in the Quad Cities on Channel 8, I will be on there at 10:30. And I thought I was going on to talk about the Cubs. Apparently, I was going on to represent the Cubs in a, like, battle royale against Cardinals fans. But the Cardinals fan that was on there, I don't remember if he said it on the air or before, but he said that he thinks that Heron was trying to hit him on purpose, but just missed. Didn't mean to hit him in the head. And I was like, I don't know. Like, he was like, oh, he was probably trying to plunk him like in the thigh, but he missed. And I was like, well,
it's just not a situation where Heron's has any reason to hit him on purpose.
Well, right. I mean, like, if you look at a graph, like, if he missed, well, who's to say he wasn't trying to throw a strike and he missed? I mean, why would you assume he was trying to hit him? It was just, it was silly, but I wasn't going to go there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was ridiculous. So, yeah, like I said, I mean, in hindsight, I mean, they threw at Rizzo, which, you know, got everybody worked up, but, you know, they did throw at his leg, which is good. But the flip side of that is, like, if they'd have hurt Rizzo on purpose this late in the year with the playoffs on the line, like, that's just unacceptable. And so it's unacceptable to do that kind of thing on purpose this late in the season, in my mind. But again, like I said, I'm not that worked up about it now. I think it worked itself out, you know. Cardinals players took a couple pitches in the back later. Whether or not those were intentional, who knows? But it kind of worked itself out in the next game. I mean, I will say that the tossing of Rondon in the ninth really pissed me off, because again, no reason for him to hit him on purpose. He's got two strikes on him. Madden brings in the closer to try to work in, or no, was it the eighth or the ninth?
That was the ninth.
And then, yeah, Rondon gets tossed. It was just dumb. But at the same
time, I mean, the umps were kind of in the position, in a position where they had to do it.
Yep.
It was really unfortunate because I don't think he meant to at all, but I mean, they had to kick him out. And
so that was very frustrating. But at the same, you know, these things work themselves out. I think it was probably a bigger deal to the fans than it was to the players.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Rizzo was pretty pissed for like a few minutes, but then he moved on.
Right.
But I like all the fans on Twitter calling Rizzo a pansy or whatever because of how he reacted. And I don't think so, man. I mean, like, he was able to maintain his cool. He took like one or two measured steps toward the mound, and that's it.
Granted, he had a bat in his hand.
And then he dropped a couple F-bombs, but I mean.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it did not really bother me that Rondon got kicked out. And it just, you know, like Rondon said afterwards that the ump came out and basically told him, you know, you're going to have to wear this. Sorry. And and I think Rondon understood.
He was just like, yeah, okay.
It didn't really bother me because I don't think Rondon did it on purpose. And on the other hand, it's like, I don't know. Like, I honestly don't want, I don't mind that there being a little bit of like chippiness between the two teams. But right now, I just don't want anybody to get hurt. I don't think it's kind of fun because it's just like things are tense right now between the two teams. But on the other hand, like, nobody needs to get suspended. Nobody needs to get hurt. There's really no reason to escalate it. And so that's why I was like, it did not bother me at all that Rondon was kicked out of the game. And you could tell his reaction. He didn't, he understood.
I mean, I guess I would say, I agree. I don't blame the umps. They did what they had to do. It just was frustrating in the in-game situation because then it put them in a bad spot. And then, you know, he had to bring Roskopf and he just sucked it.
Well, no, Roskopf was before. That's when they went to Strope.
Right? Oh, okay. Never mind. So it was Roskopf that was the next day.
No, Roskopf was the inning before, I believe. Right?
Oh.
He did go to Strope. Yesterday's game. Yeah. Roskopf came in yesterday's game when they were up 5-1 and gave up that homer to Cat Carpenter, and then Strope came in and finished it off.
Right.
Yeah. I think he sucked 2 days in a row.
Oh, okay. but the whole chippiness thing definitely doesn't detract from how engaging the games are to watch. In fact,
no.
I mean, the heightened tension and the competitiveness, I mean, it just made for great viewing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, you know, being out in public and then I see people wearing Cardinals stuff during the game and I was giving them dirty looks and then I felt stupid later. But you know what I mean? It's like it fires up that thing that gets you just mad. And then at the, you know, at the end of the series, now I'm calmed down. So,
but as far as people hating on Roskopf though, I mean, Yeah, he hasn't really pitched well for the Cubs every single appearance, but the stuff that he has, it seems like he should be getting better results. I mean, the guy throws in the mid 90s. His pitches have decent break on them. I just don't understand why he seems to be so hittable.
Yeah, I think he's a guy who should be better. I mean, that pitch, that sort of like really, really left to right moving slider, I guess it is, that he throws is good. Like, it looks good. It's just he's getting hit, and that was right. he was just making a lot of mistakes on the plate. But when he throws that pitch in the right spot, he gets a lot of strikeouts, and that's sure. What he's good. It's just that he floats one over the plate and gets crushed.
Yeah. And Corey was saying when we were talking about it in the car yesterday as well, he is on the roster. I mean, he's a part of this team, and the manager is going to use him in the spots mm-hmm. that he thinks are appropriate. And, you know, that situation wasn't as high leverage as
it ended up being.
as he made it. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Completely hate him. I just, in that moment, it just, you know,
right.
A lot of anger pouring out of me.
Right. We just want him to finish off the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the reason that I said that really is because you'll hear a lot of people say, you know, don't use, you know, like, You should not use a certain reliever. And it's like, well, that doesn't do any good, especially right now. A playoff position is in hand. You know, we've got it. And you need to start getting players ready for the...
All hands on deck.
Right. You've got to start getting guys, and anybody that's struggling, like a Grimm, you want them to work through it. And that's,
how about Neil Ramirez coming back today?
Yeah, yeah. He looked good. But the one thing in all this drama with the Cardinals and Cardinals fans and everything is that internet muscle flexes are not hard to find right now. In fact, you just find them everywhere. I found them in my Twitter stream. Just
sort of the perfect storm for muscle flexes. It was unfortunate kind of that the Kong injury happened at the day before the hit by pitch drama.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I was thinking is that for some reason, the Cardinals fans kind of tried to bring ownership
that into the conversation.
Yeah, yeah, they like tried to take ownership of that Kung situation. Yeah. And it's like, whoa, hold on a second. These are totally separate things. And I mean, going back, if we want to go back to that incident, I don't think that was any more dirty than almost every play take where somebody's slide. Trying yeah, to
that's,
break up a
the
double
fact
play
that people so quickly ignore that's the correct play in that situation. That's just what baseball players do when then a double play is being turned. You make a hard slide, and yeah, maybe the knee, maybe his foot got a little high and he hit him in the knee, but like when you're sliding in at full speed, that's those well, things happen.
And I
so
think,
yeah, it's just kind of funny to me that people just, you know, forget about how baseball has been played.
Well, and the Pirates said they understood, you know, Coughlin mm-hmm. like apologized to Kung, and every, you know, everything was fine there. But for some reason, Cardinals fans like take it upon themselves to like, you know, just be so offended by that and almost like put that on. It was almost, yeah, it just felt like they took ownership of that situation. Yeah.
And they were acting like the entire Cubs team drew it up. Like, they huddled up in the dugout. We got to take this guy's knee out. All right.
Coughlin, so, we need you to get on first so that you can have a dirty slide in a second.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like they're drawn with a stick in the dirt. Like, here's where you're going to, here's the bag.
Yeah.
I need your leg to be at least at a 60 degree angle.
Right. Go in hard and high.
Speaking of this play and muscle flexes, the Korean News One called it a murderous tackle, which I thought was hilarious. I mean, for good reason, the Koreans love Kung. He's like a national hero there. So they were not happy when the news broke the next day.
Man.
But then they went back to playing World of Warcraft and StarCraft. Just kidding. That was super racist. Wait, is it racist?
I don't even get it, so I can't comment.
No, it was over my head.
They just like gaming, computer gaming. It's big over there. That's all I'm saying.
kind of going, you know, thinking about the internet muscle flexes, though, I was trying to think of like, okay, what is it that, I mean, other than that, like I said before, that air of an inevitability that the Cardinals had that I think that they've lost. What is it that has just really riled them up this weekend? And it can't just be a couple of hit by pitches, you know, that.
It's fear that they're not as good as this record shows.
I think what it is that they had this moment of realization this weekend that their team has the best record in baseball. They've been incredible all season, and it could all be ended by the Cubs in the playoffs. I think it was just that realization. That's my take.
And for a few years, you know, for years to come.
Yeah,
their playoff chances could be ruined by this team that they're playing. Well, that's
kind of what I was going to say. Is like, here you've got what Molina's like in his 34, something like that. Like, he's not old, but he's older. He got a little banged up today. And then here you got these Cubs who are like 21 to 24.
Right.
And like, you know, they're going to be good for a long time. I think it's getting under their skin a little bit.
Yeah.
Because they know they're going to have to, not only are the Cubs going to be good, they're going to have to hear about it for like six years. Yeah. And I love it.
But after going into St. Louis, taking 2 out of 3 from the Cardinals there, and now in this series, taking 2 out of 3, I think that this Cubs team has really demonstrated that they aren't intimidated by the Cardinals or anyone else. And I don't think that the Pirates intimidate them. And granted, I'm biased, but I think if you're a Cardinals or a Pirates fan or a fan of any other team heading into the playoffs, I don't want to face the Cubs. I would not want, you know, with their offensive firepower, the top of the rotation, and the fact that they're just playing hot. I would not want to face them.
I think a better sign even for the Cubs than beating the Cardinals that the way that they did in the first two games is beating or taking 3 out of 4 from the Pirates, who I think are, you know, playing hotter baseball than the Cardinals right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that comment gained a lot of traction.
Yeah.
But I mean, for the Pirates, you know, the last couple of days they've played well against the Dodgers and their best pitching. And they just got off of losing 3 straight to the Cubs. And so they were able to win the game against Kershaw. They lost to Greinke, but a split in that is acceptable for them. And then they won today.
Yeah.
I think they're bigger than the Cardinals.
Yeah, they've responded. I mean, to be in that position where it's like Cubs already won, you know, you got to beat like one of the best pitchers in baseball. The Pirates are good. I don't want to say too much more about them, but they're impressive.
They don't scare me though.
Than the Cardinals.
They don't scare me though. And I don't
check out the.
I love how this is like a schoolyard fight.
They don't scare me.
You don't scare me.
My dad could beat up your dad. Yeah, but Wes in the chat said, "Can any NL team beat us in a best of 7?" Corey and I were kind of talking about if the Cubs can get past the NLDS. Do you guys see any other team causing like a huge problem for the Cubs or being like a?
Well, I think if we can, face the Dodgers so that we don't need to face Greinke and Kershaw in 4 of those games, then we're okay. I think if we can like somehow start that series with their number 3 starter or whatever, then I would feel a little bit more confident. That's the only thing that scares me. But I think if we can put up Arrieta, I think that's just the same. I mean, I think every team has to fear that. Like, how are we going to beat Arrieta?
Yeah. And I would say it's like just because of the number of variables that go into that kind of a prediction, just because like the way Lester pitched today, if that happens, it's going to be tough to beat the Dodgers. But if Lester brings what he had last outing, well, then we can match Kershaw, Greinke, you know, head to head. But I think the Cubs starting staff outside of Arrieta is just a much bigger question mark than than the Dodgers. But
yeah,
I guess I don't know how that lines up. Like in let's see, I don't want to go into it now, but who they might play after the NLDS.
Well, it would be the Mets
are
or the Dodgers.
Okay. Yeah, Dodgers, I guess, then I'd pick to be the most threatening.
Well, yeah, since we beat the Mets every time we played them this year. But they have good pitching too. I mean, the cool thing is that we've just been able to watch this team mature and come into its own right in front of us. It's just amazing how much different this team is than it was 2 months ago. And it's so weird. I don't think I've ever in my life seen a team transform this much just over the course of a season or a couple months. I mean, it's just so unique. Funny
how, like, all these rookies feel like sort of seasoned, or at least like third, fourth year players.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of incredible. I think it's easy to take for granted too, but
yeah,
it's what we're seeing is so incredible. I think it's hard to really know it in the moment.
This is like the most hilarious thing, because for years we've podcasted and be like, they're just bad. We're just going to have to wait. We're just going to have to wait. And then it gets here and we're just like, they're really freaking good. I don't know. I mean, they're just good. They're just fun.
They've already improved their record by 14 wins, and we're not even done yet. That's,
yeah, still 2 weeks
that's
left.
That's a good improvement in a season, and they still have 13 to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking at things today because I was just kind of thinking about how much better this team is and everything and how well they've been playing. And so the Cubs, I think they have the second best record in baseball in one run games. They're 32-19. Well, actually now it would be 32-20 in one run games. And they are 12-5 in extra innings games. That's the best in baseball. And it really does seem, and you talk about these young players, Kurt. I mean, it really does seem like they play really well under pressure. And I think that's developed through success and confidence, that they're a team that I don't think if they're down by 3-4 runs in the seventh or eighth or ninth inning, that's when they produce.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, like today when they're down by two, and then you get, I mean, they didn't cash in like they needed to, but you get the bases loaded with nobody out. Like, at that moment, I thought, oh, they've got this. Like, we're going to pull this off. But, you know, they don't back off and they don't give in, even though we only have, you know, maybe 6 to 9 outs left.
Yeah. Another thing that I was thinking about today, too, is just that it feels like this offense is becoming more consistent, too, because it seemed like there for a while that it was like just a run or two or 10. There wasn't really anything in between. And it seems like over the last month that we're not getting those extremes. They're not putting up 10 runs and then one the next day. And I looked back over the last month or so, the last time that the Cubs scored one run in a game was August 28th. It's now September 20th. They've scored two runs in a game 4 times, and they only lost one of those. And they're just consistently scoring 5, 6, 7 runs a game. And to me, that's a recipe for success right now.
Yeah, and in September, they've scored 5.72 per game. I think league average is like just over 4. And, you know, so they've definitely been scoring more and more consistently. And I kind of looked up to 5 seems to be their magic number. If they score 4 runs, they're 12-11. And when they score 5, they're 13-5. So it's like just getting over that 4-run hurdle drastically improves their odds of winning. And then, of course, I mean, that stands to reason. The more runs you score, sure, the more likely you are to win. But, you know, the difference between the 4 runs and 5 runs, and then furthermore 6 and beyond, is just even better. So, yeah, if they can score 5, they pretty much got it in the bag. And they've been doing that more often. So,
yeah.
And that's good to see.
Is there anything else you guys wanted to say about the offense before we move on?
I do want to give some props to, like, you know, Castro really stepping it up lately. And it's kind of nice to see that, like, as some guys cool off, like Fowler was really hot for a while and then has cooled off, and Schwarber's kind of cooled off, that it's really balanced. You know, Bryant stepped up in September. And LaStella coming back, he's been really good. So it's like, it's nice to see that a couple of guys aren't carrying the load the whole time, that when some guys cool off, that the offense as a whole just keeps on chugging.
Yeah. Kurt, do you have a scary stat today?
I do have one.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, how about this? Does it involve any of those three players?
The three that I mentioned being better?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, never mind.
But you can go ahead, and if it happens to be the same thing.
I'm sure it's the same thing. So I'll just put it in my back pocket in case you it's something different. Go ahead, Andy. Sorry.
I'm pretty sure it's the same thing because I know how much you love a particular person.
I was just going to say, Corey, you and I were talking about how it seems like it's like clockwork that the Cubs, like the third time through the order, It seems like they just seem to really get just sort of hone in on a pitcher and lock in and are able to break through, you know, more often than not. And you were talking about finding stats to back that up. I was just looking that in the fifth inning this year, the Cubs are hitting .298.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
when I was looking up the sort of runs stats too, I noticed that they've scored more runs in the fifth than any other inning by like 10 or 12 runs. So,
right. And that's that third time through the order. And it just seems like in the last couple of weeks, it's like clockwork.
Yep.
That third time through the order, that's when it all happens.
The Tsuyoshi Wada effect.
Well, and that's when, and that usually is when they've knocked out. It's just amazing how much they can drive up the pitch count. I forget. Well, yesterday in Waka pitched, right? Saturday's game. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was in like the third or fourth inning, and he was at like 80, 85 pitches, something like that. And it's just amazing to see. And it's just not something that you would expect a really young team to be able to do, to be able to just drive up someone's pitch count to that. Like, I mean, if they can do that in the playoffs, if they can get into the bullpens in like the fifth inning in almost every game, that's, I mean, otherwise, or
they'll be hard to beat.
Right. Or these teams are going to realize that, like, you know, the playoffs are do or die. And so you just like ride somebody for 135 pitches or something like that. Yeah. But then that's where, you know, you can really jump on their mistakes. So,
yeah. And I was going to point that out too, is like, especially in the playoffs when a guy might go on short rest, if you can drive up that pitch count in the first time you see him, it's only going to help you later in the series if that happens, you know, if that happens.
Right.
But yeah, that's been super impressive to see them, you know, work full counts just almost regularly and keep driving it up.
Yeah. And even if,
and then do good things on full counts.
Well, and even like yesterday, I think it was yesterday, maybe Friday, where Baez struck out, but he forced the pitcher to throw like 8 or 9 pitches. And if you're, or, yeah, maybe 7 or 8. I don't remember. But, I mean, he forced a full count. I think he fouled a few off. So, I mean, if you strike out, I mean, the Cubs strike out a lot, but they don't strike out on the first 3 pitches. You're guaranteed that they're going to see at least 6 probably in a strikeout. So, I don't know. It's really fun to see basically kids do that. You know, it's one of those aspects. You know, you knew that the power would probably be there. Like, that wasn't going to surprise you. And you knew the strikeouts were going to be there. It's this, like, pitch count thing and how much they force, how much pressure they put on other teams' pitching staffs. Like, that's something that I really did not expect. So, while we're on the topic of pitching, I guess, we spent a lot of time on the Cubs bullpen on our last episode. But really, it's one of these things that I'm really kind of focused on right now, because I think it's going to play a large role from here on out and really kind of determine what kind of success the Cubs have from here on out. So Grimm, Andy, you mentioned him, I think, or maybe I did. I don't remember. I get us mixed up. Sorry. Grimm was kind of the whipping boy there for a little bit. But now in the last 7 days, he's pitched 4 games, 3 innings pitched, and he's given up the 1 earned run. And batters here are hitting .111 off of him in that stretch. And, yeah, like you said, Andy, that's why managers go to relievers that fans think aren't playing well and managers shouldn't go to. But that's the nature of relief pitching. And one bad performance, maybe a few in a row, can really distort stats and, I think, fan perceptions of that pitcher. But the Cubs really need Grimm to be pitching well, and they need to give him the opportunity to build on success rather than, oh, well, we can't go to him because he wasn't reliable last time. I just don't think you can manage the bullpen that way right now.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and Madden's proven that, you know, a guy has a bad outing one day, he'll put him right back out there the next day. And he said before that he sees that as the best way to get him back on track, is or put them in a position that he knows they'll succeed, get one guy out and then yank him, and then get their confidence back up and move on.
Mm. Yeah.
So I definitely think he'll never manage that way. So, and that's a good thing.
Yeah. This is probably a little bit unexpected, but man, I am really enjoying Trevor Cahill right now. I did not think I would ever say that.
He really shined in these odd bullpen starts we've had to have lately. And yeah, it's been nice to see.
Yeah, they've been using him in these like 2 to 3 inning situations. And I think we most recently saw him, Saturday, when the Cubs had that bullpen day with Travis Wood getting the quote-unquote start. But so on Saturday, he pitched 3 1/3 innings, and he gave up 2 hits, struck out 3, and walked 1. Not really what you would call lights out, but he had a pretty ugly outing against the Diamondbacks at the beginning of the month. But since then, he's keeping teams off the board. And I don't know really how much you can expect from Cahill, but he helped beat the Cardinals yesterday, and he helped beat the Pirates earlier in the week. And at this point, he looks like a good option if the Cubs can get into the NLDS and someone like Hamill, if he's the third starter, is struggling. Seems like Cahill might be a decent option there. It's not ideal, but if the score is tied in 3-3 in the sixth, then the Cubs go to Trevor Cahill in game 2 in the NLDS, most likely on the road. I mean, it's not really what you want, but based on what we've seen here in the last week or two, hopefully that might be an option.
It's nice to see some of the reclamation projects work out when we've seen a number of them not work out this season, like Soriano, for example. So it's nice to see that Cahill is actually a viable piece for use in this bullpen.
Yeah, but there's a couple of, you know, look at Rodney, you know. I mean, he's another reclamation piece that in the last week he's pitched 3 innings in 3 games and opponents are hitting 0 off of him. And granted, he's had some good defense behind him, but still, I mean, I think that's basically, once the Cubs didn't do much at the trade deadline, I think you knew that's what this bullpen was going to be. It was going to be reclamation projects and just guys that you just trade for a bunch of them and hope that some of them stick. And
when your plan is
bullpen should be.
When your plan is to stockpile bats, I mean, that, yeah, some of that's going to happen on the pitching side. And I'll admit, I kind of was a little bit down on the Rodney acquisition, but I'm glad it's turned out this way.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of fun to watch, because I think not necessarily Rodney, but just this whole bullpen situation, because the bullpen is so fluid right now. There's a lot of, basically there's a lot of not very good options. That are somehow managing to pitch effectively from time to time. And Madden, it just gives Madden the ability to play the hot hand. Okay, so I have a scenario for you guys. I'm curious what you think. So let's say it comes down to the last game of the season. That game could determine home field advantage for the wild card game. So if the Cubs can win that game, game 162, it ensures that they have home field advantage. Do you think that the Cubs should start Arrieta that game against the Brewers, giving them a good chance to lock? I think it's against the Brewers, pretty sure. Giving them a chance to lock up home field advantage, and then you have Lester start the wild card game, or do you stick with it? Is that home field advantage that important?
No, it's not to me that. The wild card game being just so obviously, you know, do or die, I have to have Arrieta going in that game. So there's no way I pitch Arrieta in the 162 game to get home field advantage. To me, home field advantage is great, but there's no way I give up Arrieta to get it.
I'm inclined to agree with that. I mean, they've worked on getting their rotation set up how they want it, and then to deviate from that, I don't think is a good plan.
Yeah. I just think that home field advantage isn't that important, and I would think that the Cubs should be able to beat the Brewers in one game regardless of who they send out there. Even if they do a bullpen day, I think they should be able to beat them. And another reason I think that you don't do it is that, yeah, pushing game one of the NLDS to Jason Hamill or Hendricks. No thanks.
Heck, we'd probably be better off with the Cahill bullpen.
Yeah.
Day than that.
Or you pitch Arrieta on short rest. It's not super short rest, but it might be a day earlier than his scheduled start. So you have him start game 162 and then start game one, have Lester pitch the wild card game and then bring Lester back out for game one of the NLDS.
Yeah, I just hate to see him start off the rotation on the whole short rest. Yeah. You save that for later.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was just kind of curious what you guys thought about that. Yeah. So we have a few listener questions here, and I thought we would cover a lot in this episode, and I didn't know how long we would actually stick on the whole like beaning of players and all that kind of stuff. So I didn't throw it out there on Facebook that we were looking for questions, and these are the questions that we had emailed to us. The first one comes from Jason in New York. Says, first off, when can you remember a Cubs team with such depth? They take the first two games against the Cardinals. First with Bryant, Baez, and Soler, though just back from the DL, out of the starting lineup. Then with Wood starting. The 2003 team had more pitching depth, but Madden handling position players had been remarkable. He deserves manager of the year. So he's got a second part, but I think Madden has to have manager of the year. I think especially when you look at what the Pythagorean record of the Cubs is and then look at what their actual record is, I think you can credit Madden for a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, second, my position on this has wavered given their recent success against the Cardinals, but if you could snap your fingers and return to the single wild card system where the Cubs would need to catch the Pirates to get in, but avoid a one game play-in, would you do it? Now I am less concerned about facing the Cardinals first round, but it would mean Arrieta pitching game one of the division series. It gives the Cubs a better chance to advancing to the NLCS. And I love the idea of giving this team some playoff experience, and a division series exit is far more than I had hoped for at the start of the year. I would have been happy to just have them competing for a wild card spot in September, but now I'm on board for more. What do you think? So what do you think if you could switch it so that the Cubs had to catch the Cardinals or had to catch the Pirates to get into the wild card, but then they don't have to play a wild card game? What do you guys think?
I don't think so, because I do sometimes yearn or feel nostalgic for the single wild card days, but then I think, well, the Cubs are almost guaranteed a playoff spot now, and I'm pretty pleased with that. So
yeah. What do you think, Kurt?
I'm so lost in thought. I can't even respond. But I don't know. I guess I think that's an easy one to say, yeah, when the Cubs are a game back of the Pirates. But like when they're three or four back, you think, oh, you'd rather have that second spot. So at this point, I'd probably be inclined to just say, I'd rather just have the chance and keep it at the two wild cards.
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, I really think that Jason's question is a good question, but it's hilarious to me that like here we are, like we actually have a playoff spot in hand, and we're like, maybe we should give that up?
Yeah, like, would you give it up? Like, you're playing with house money. Like, you go ahead and let it ride and try to win more.
But I think it's a good question, and it's like tempting because like, basically, are we confident enough that the Cubs could catch the Pirates in the next 2 weeks, make up two games in the next 2 weeks to to avoid a one game play-in? I think it's, I don't know, it's a good question.
Yeah, the one game still scares me, but I'm happy to just be in it at this point.
Right. Cass from Benton, Illinois says, hello guys, I've noticed there are less Cubs games on TV in my area in Southern Illinois. The WGN games are only on local, are only locally in Chicago right now, and I can't see the ABC games because or that are broadcast locally either. I only have access to the CSN games, and that's because I subscribe to Dish. The games are all blacked out for me if I subscribe to MLB Extra Innings as well. It kind of explains the situation, which we've been talking about from the very beginning, and it's a situation that all three of us are in too, or somewhat. We've found little workarounds here and there. He said, I did see that the NBA will start selling individual games and season packages for individual teams as well. Do you think MLB might do something like this in the future? The new commissioner, Rob Manfred, said talks like he wants to be more technology friendly and forward thinking. Maybe we can get rid of these crappy blackout rules. I always thought Cardinals games should be blacked out down here and not Cubs games. Sorry for the long rant, and go Cubs. So I thought, like, this is kind of a good, I mean, this is the first year that WGN is not in the picture, and the three of us were going to have to work to get Cubs games, to be able to watch all the Cubs games. And I thought here towards the end of the year, maybe we could kind of talk about our experience and what this first year was like.
Well, for me, it hasn't been any different because I fall into that figure it out workaround category. So I did that last year, and I'm a cord cutter. I don't have any kind of cable or anything like that. And I have not missed a single game, or I guess I that's not entirely true. I've missed games, but not because I wasn't able to watch them on TV. So every game has been available to me based on the workaround. And I think the things are shifting, that this scenario won't last forever. And eventually we'll be able to stream whenever we want. And that's already kind of changing. Like when I look forward to the playoffs, most of the Cubs, the NL games are going to be on TBS. Well, I could just order Sling for 2 months or a month or whatever, mm-hmm, for $20 a month, and I've got the game. So yeah, the times are changing. So I think if you're stuck in that scenario, it won't last too much longer.
Yeah. And when the Cubs have talked about it. They talked about it at Cubs convention when I was up there for the blogger forum that the Cubs did with the front office. Crane Kenny said that he thought that by the time that the next Cubs TV contract came around, that this stuff would be kind of resolved. And but what is that, Kurt? 2019?
Yeah, 2019 something is when like that contract, it goes through 2019, I think.
Okay.
The CSN contract.
Yeah. Andy, did you have much trouble this year watching what you wanted to watch?
Not at all. I actually still am a cable subscriber, and so I'm blessed to... Well, don't make me charge the mound. I'm blessed to live in an area where local stations picked up, you know, those WGN Chicago games and stuff like that. So I've been able to watch every game pretty much except watch or listen to every game except for when it's a day game and I'm at work. So yeah, it's just work that interferes with my viewership, not anything to do with it being available.
Yeah. I actually wasn't able to watch a number of games, and really I could have. I did the workaround that Kurt does. However, I'm not quite as good at it, and so I can't.
Now who's the 80-year-old man?
I can't get it to work on my TV. I can get it to work on my computer, but for some reason I can't get it to work on my TV. So it just, there's something that feels weird to me about sitting at a computer and watching a baseball game. And I just, on those WGN date games, I just decided I would rather listen to it than watch it. And that really probably works better for me anyways, because it allows me to get other things done instead of me just camping out and watching baseball for 3 hours. So couple here from Jason in Korea. The first one says, listening to your podcast and you're talking about Cubs fans freaking out over one loss or a bad night by a pitcher. And I wanted to offer a bit of insight as to why. My buddy, who will remain nameless, Todd, is a longtime Cubs fan with a pinging freakout meter, and he has explained why. The Cubs have been so bad for so long, something always happens to derail success, and he lives and dies by the seasons of hope. He said he's terrified this is just a glimmer of hope that will be crushed by another decade of losing. He's that guy that we don't want at Wrigley down 3-2 in the fifth inning. He will be hysterical. Yeah, I get that. Andy, you and I were around someone this weekend that I think falls into that category too. And I think it's kind of, I think it's like this. For the last 3 or 4 years, you had people that just could not wrap their heads around this rebuild. And I think that those are the same people that can't wrap their heads around the fact that this team will continue to be good.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look at this team, though. I mean, you just want to kind of shake them and say snap out of it. But so conditioned to expect the worst that even when the Cubs defy that expectation, it still clings to people, you know?
Right.
And that's kind of why I hesitate too, because like I've not been in this as long as you guys. You know, I've started in the 90s, and you guys have kind of been fans your whole life. Not that the 90s was like yesterday, but so I'm cautious to criticize like longtime fans who've suffered and who have that. What did he call it? Whatever the meter, what he called, but you know, the freakout meter.
Yeah, the pinging freakout.
So I don't like to criticize people who have it, but at the same time, like I guess I'm still sort of in the optimist world that I don't freak out too easily.
Yeah, I don't think
I'm also not going to criticize people who do. I mean, I just, right. Baseball to me is still just like an entertainment thing. And I love the Cubs. I mean, I've been doing this podcast since forever. So, you know, I absolutely love baseball and I love the Cubs. But at the same time, I don't lose my stuff every time. Something bad goes wrong, because I don't want to have ulcers,
right? And it's not the end of the world.
Yeah,
although I'm sure that angers people to hear us say that, but
yeah,
I don't know. I just fall back on the, like, it's been a rough stretch, Cubs fans, so just enjoy it. I don't understand why you'd want the negativity around you right now. But
yeah, and if you can't enjoy this season, you probably should just give up. Right. You know, I mean, you haven't had fun this season and enjoyed watching this team, and no matter what happens from this point forward, then yeah, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I think you're right. The other one here from Jason says, the question was brought up why pitchers tilt their caps. I looked up an answer from Fernando Rodney. He said Fernando the Arrow Rodney, a righty, and explains it's to deceive hitters and base runners as to where he's looking. But I can offer the real reason. So he's gonna give it to us here. He says, "Stay with me." He says, "As someone who has stood on the mound under lights, I can say that wearing the cap traditionally exposes my left eye. I'm a righty like Strope as well. To the glare of." Okay, so it exposes his left eye to the glare of the lights with his right eye shaded. He said, if I would have tilted my cap slightly to the left, both eyes would have been covered, giving me a clearer look in at my catcher. If, back in the day, I'd only tilted my hat to the left, maybe I would have seen that second finger and not thrown a fastball to the guy who eats heaters. Oh, well, power to the tilt. So I kind of like that. I don't know.
I think it's a good reasoning. It makes sense, but I think it's entirely a fashionable thing to do for these guys as opposed to like baseball reason.
Yeah, I don't know. I like it either way. It doesn't matter to me. I get a kick out of it. One more here. This is not really a question, but an email that I got from Jeremy, and he says, "Hey guys, big news. At 3:40 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Coombdog declared that all of Lester's issues via his holding on base runners has been solved. This was immediately after Ross had picked off the guy off first base. So after we apologize to Andy for ever doubting him or Lester, we need to ask ourselves, really?" Coomer's logic was that every playoff team has a scout there and made it sound like everyone was going to be on notice that Lester was no longer an easy mark to run on, and Ross, as always, is his Sundance kid. So I implore you once again, really? I'm not trying to be negative about Lester or Ross. They've been great, but Coom Dog needs to dial it back. No.
Well, I just think I heard that part of the broadcast, and I think he was just saying the days of teams, at least for the rest of the season, taking a ridiculous, like immoderate lead are over. It's not like teams aren't going to still try to run, but they've been taking just ridiculous leads and getting ridiculous jumps. And Lester did show a great throw over to first today. Yeah. And so
was it Peralta?
Yeah. Peralta got picked off.
Wait a minute. So I must've missed this.
Yeah, he like barely even moved his feet, just tossed it over to first. And Peralta was like halfway to second.
So he threw to first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a perfect throw.
Huh.
And then, yeah, Peralta took off.
How did I miss this? I must have been doing laundry.
It was kind of impressive to see, because when it happened, I was like, whoa, he just...
And so he picked him off, like, so Peralta had taken off, or did he try to get back?
Well, he was so far off of first that Peralta knew he was,
So he started running.
Yeah. So he started running a second, knowing he was going to get run down.
Interesting. I wish I would have seen that. I'll have to watch the condensed game.
Yeah, if he could continue work on that pickoff move, like, he just basically arm threw it over, like no foot action.
Huh.
Yeah, and it was a perfect throw. And I think he's right. You know, Coomer, was kind of let go of the reins a little bit when he was talking about it. But still, I mean, but still, it's true, though. I mean, like teams are paying attention to these starts by the Cubs pitchers, and they're going to see that. And it's going to modify the way that they see being on first base against Lester a little bit.
So we do have a friend of the podcast, someone that if you've been listening to our podcast for a number of years, you've heard him on here before. And that is Tim Sheridan, who is the Cubs, PA announcer at their spring training games. And he is working on a new project. And we wanted to share it with you because I think it's definitely worth supporting. So Kurt, why don't you talk about this for a second?
Yeah, so first I want to say a couple nice things about Tim, and that when Corey and I went out, was that 2010 or 11?
I think 11.
Yeah, back when we were, before you probably ever heard of IVMB, Tim was completely open and friendly and just like so welcoming for us when we came out and visited. And so we got to know him, and since then, like Corey said, friend of the podcast, and he's been working on a film about the Cubs. And originally, I think it was something different, but it has shifted into what he's now calling public address. And it's really just his behind-the-scenes footage, because I think it's been, 30 years he's been doing it or something?
Yeah, somewhere close to that.
Like 30 years of footage from spring training and other, I think probably from Wrigley too. But he's working on a film called Public Address. And at this, he's reached to the point where I think he's ready to wrap it up, and he needs some music, and as we all know, music isn't free, and good music especially is not free, and so he needs a little money, a little support to help sort of get him to the finish line. So he's got an Indiegogo project set up to help fund it, and I don't know, like, a short address I can share. I'll let you figure that out, Corey, but we'll probably share it in the notes below the podcast. But Tim is a great guy, and some of this footage is really amazing. It's been used at Cubs convention, so you may have seen it if you were at Cubs convention. There's some Harry Carey stuff, Sano, just a lot of really cool stuff, and he's putting it together in a film that he's gonna put out for all of us to see. So right, it'd be great if you could throw a little support behind it and get it finished.
Yeah, I will post a link in the blog post for this this episode, but And some of you may not know Tim's name, but he is the person that's behind Boys of Spring and boysofspring.com, which is, during spring training, always has like the best pictures from as soon as players start arriving. He's there taking pictures, filming things. And so he's just has like, literally like decades of content and footage. And so I think this film that he's putting together is going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm. And he's been working on it for a while. And I know that, he's gonna be excited to get it out there for people to see. And, he's got some musicians working with him, and I actually went and listened to some of their stuff that they play, you know, in their regular bands. And I think it's going to be pretty amazing.
Yeah. Cool. So Kurt, do you have a scary stat for us?
You said you did.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You're going to like this one, Corey. I know you are.
Okay.
It involves Starling. you know, we know the Starlin history this year. Castro was benched on August 6th, or after the August 6th game, and he returned on the 11th. And since he's returned, he's hitting .362. He has 35 hits in the last 35 games with 5 home runs and 15 RBI. And, you know, one of those was that 2 home run game when he just crushed those 2 shots and was responsible for, 6 of the RBI in that game. So, yeah, it's been... yeah, a nice little turning point for Starlin. That was for you, Corey. Turning point. but yeah, to see him have to go to the bench and then come back and respond like this, it's been incredible. I think he deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah. So can I kind of build on your scary stat?
No.
Okay. So these are from Mark Gonzalez tweeted these today. And he said, in the past, you mentioned Castro's numbers since he was quote-unquote benched, I guess. In the last 23 games, Castro is hitting .394 with 5 home runs. La Stella, in his last 8 games, I mean, you mentioned earlier, you singled out Castro, La Stella, and Bryant, the players that have kind of like picked the team up as Schwarber and Rizzo have maybe slowed down a little bit. So La Stella, in his last 8 games, he's batting .467 with 6 RBIs. And Bryant, in his last 30 games, he's hitting .353 with 9 home runs, 10 doubles, 29 RBI in 30 games. He is producing. But 9 home runs and 10 doubles. That's pretty impressive. Okay, I have a couple of internet muscle flexes. This first one was sent in by Ryan, and it's from the Twitter handle at Poklahoma, which I don't know, it just made me giggle. I'm not sure why. It says, "Congrats to the Cubs and their fans for celebrating winning the battle and not the war. Good for you guys." And then like the action asterisk thing, and it says head pat. You know, just that condescending Cardinal fan head pat. Oh, good for you guys for winning the battle and not the war.
Don't touch me.
And then another one here came from another Whistler listener, Will, and he emailed this to me. It said, "Cheap shot, no question about it. Probably racially motivated. Kung's been thrown at all year."
Is a John Rocker on the mound or something?
No, yeah, seriously. Cheap shot, no question. Probably racially motivated. Maybe not. Maybe not.
Oh, no.
So, all right. Anything
Is that
else?
Why they hit Wong in the back?
Yeah, twice. Hey, wait, we might be onto something. So that does it for this episode. This episode was brought to you by all of our Patreon contributors. A special thanks to our Hall of Fame level contributors: Jeremy, Dave, Dizzle, David, Jeremy, Chad, Todd, Dave, Adam, Dallas, Charles, Steven, Stewart, Guy, Peter, Jeff, Matthew, Jane, Shane, Michael, John, Craig, Rick, Luke, Artie, Kevin, Tori, and Josh. Our associate producers are Matthew Macer, Anthony Hutfels, Joshua Hansen, Ryan Shores, Brian Hunt, Andrew Gross, Tim Marr, Jason in New Mexico, Tristan Nichols, and the Quad Cities own Jason Nunn. We would like to thank Matthew from Justice, Illinois, for jumping on the Patreon campaign as a Hall of Fame level contributor in the last week. Patreon is like Kickstarter for content creators. It helps us pay the podcasting bills, and it helps us pay for the things to make everyone's IVNV experience better, like the development of our iOS and Android app, which you can get in the iOS App Store or the Google Play Store. If you enjoy our podcast and you'd like to help us keep things expanding and improving, go to patreon.com/IVMV or just go to IVMV.com and click on the Patreon link on the side of the page. Pledging levels start at just $1 a month. That's just pocket change for you, and it helps us out a ton. And there's perks at every level. Check it all out at patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV. So like I said on the midweek episode, Cubs fans are pumped right now, and it's been an awesome season. And if you're at work, school, in the grocery store, wherever, and you're talking about the Cubs with someone, tell them about our podcast. We'd really appreciate that. Tell them they can listen through the free IVMV app if they have an iPhone or an Android phone, or just tell them to go to IVMV.com. So Andy and I will be back on Wednesday night to talk about this Brewers series. And until then, go Cubs. Gonna pop champagne by the lakeside when the evening comes. When the stars align, we're gonna pop champagne. Gonna pop champagne by the lakeside.